Otaku no Podcast, episode 9 for Monday, September 21st, 2009, Anime on the Cheap, part 1. The new episode of Otaku no Podcast is here. I'm so sorry, people. I meant to get this episode out sooner, but let's just say the fates have been conspiring against me. For one thing, summer has finally hit us with a vengeance. Its temperatures have been pretty high these days, and, I suppose I could have recorded, but the sound of the air conditioner droning in the background would have been quickly annoying. And unfortunately, I don't have a fancy sound-isolated studio where I can record. I hope to someday. I'll probably be moving in the next year or so back to my ancestral home, where I hope to set up a room dedicated for podcasting and that sort of thing. But I don't have that yet. I also got hit with a sudden flurry of work. Just things have gotten really busy with the contract job that I'm on. And with the economy being the way it is, you kind of have to take what work you can get when you can get it. I'm not like Leo Laporte or somebody where podcasting is my, lifeblood. I have to make my living the old-fashioned way. And then, as if that weren't enough, my computer died. Ugh. I actually had an episode about halfway done at that point, and then my hard drive went, Lost all that, of course. So, well, here we are, new episode finally at last. Speaking about Leo Laporte, I was recently on Leo's Tech Guy radio show, and of course I advertised the podcast, so I'd like to welcome everybody who came here through my appearance on Leo's show. Hey, how's that for a segue? I hope you enjoy your stay. And of course, I'm definitely open to comments. I mean, I'm still pretty new at this stuff, so your comments and suggestions are greatly appreciated. Go to the Otaku no Podcast website and you'll find all the ways that you can contact me. Finally, before we get into things, I'd like to give another shout out to my good friends DJ City and DJ Gladiator over at TJX, the Japan Experience. They recently posted a shout out to several other podcasters, including myself, so thank you guys. But also, they've recently posted up a couple of episodes detailing more of their exploits while traveling around Japan. For example, they talk a lot about the Aomori and Hokkaido areas, Nara Prefecture, and the Daibutsu, or giant Buddha statues. And they talk about the Odaiba Onsen Monogatari and the all-important topic of onsen etiquette, which I really wish I had known before we went to an onsen in our Japan trip in 2004. It would have made things go a bit smoothly. Oh well. Anyways, check out their podcast at jrajio.net, jrajio.net. It's pretty cool, and you'll like it a lot. Now that the preliminaries are out of the way, let's get into the news.
Otaku News Flash!
First off, let me follow up on some things that I talked about previously. A couple weeks ago, I posted on the website about an event coming up of the Japan Girls Night Tour, which is a great sort of indie rock punk all-girl band tour that hit several locations in San Francisco and Los Angeles. Japanator was able to send a reporter to the event. He did a pretty good write-up of the final concert at the Roxy in L.A., including some great pictures, so check it out. The show opened with two local bands, Ajuku Girls, sort of a pop morning musume-style group, and Lemon Dropkick, which is kind of a hardcore punk group. Finally, the main event featuring Omodaka and the 6% Doki Doki Shop Girls, which is, I gather, sort of electronica combined with really cool onstage dancing. Red Bacteria Vacuum, love that name, which is sort of indie punk, and Sushi Mamire, which has heavy sort of ska surf influence with a little punk and rock mixed in. Anyways, check out their report as well as the great pictures that they posted. I also wrote recently about Comiket 76, which was held at the Tokyo Big Sight Convention Center last month. One of the things I talked about was the legendary cosplay to be found at Comiket events. Of course, if you search Google and Flickr and stuff, you'll find some great pictures, but I found a couple of picture galleries posted by the people at Japanator as well as Sankaku Complex, which kind of illustrate the kind of cool cosplay that you can see at a Comiket. So check those out. The links to all the above are in the show notes. Anyways, let's get on to the news. We begin with a bit of sad news, and something I honestly missed last month. On August 13th of this year, Les Paul, legendary inventor of the solid body electric guitar, passed away at age 94. Of course, we all know him as, of course, as I said, the inventor of the solid body electric guitar. Actually, he didn't really invent it, but he perfected it. But what many people don't know is that he was also a very accomplished musician. In fact, he performed regularly right up to the day he died. He was also a great pioneer in the recording industry and was responsible for many technical innovations, including multi-track recording, overdubbing, and delay effects. He developed the techniques and the equipment used in all sorts of recording to this very day. Obviously, this has tremendous ramifications for the J-pop, J-rock scene, because, well, not only did he develop the instruments that they use, he also developed the recording techniques. Multi-track recording and stuff is also used in anime and that sort of thing. So, really, we have a lot to thank Les Paul for. There's a great Wikipedia article on Les Paul that talks more about his music and the technologies that he helped develop. Definitely check that out. Bandai is teaming up with NCM Fathom Events to bring us a special one-night-only screening of the new Eureka 7 movie, Eureka 7 Good Night, Sleep Tight, Young Lovers. Again, this is one night only, Thursday, September 24th, at select theaters throughout the United States. Consult the event website for the list of theaters. Tickets are available at the theaters themselves and also online. And again, check the website for ticket ordering. Now, if you're unfamiliar with Eureka 7, or if you fell behind the episodes, the good news is that Crunchyroll has all 50 episodes of the anime up for viewing in both sub and dub formats. There's also a trailer for the Eureka 7 movie that you might want to check out as well. Again, all those links are in the show notes. Funimation has recently started a new program, a joint effort between itself and various anime clubs and theaters across the country to bring anime on the big screen. The latest of these efforts is Anime at the Palace, in partnership with Anime Syracuse. This event is held every third Monday of each month, starting today, September 21st. The location is at the Palace Theater, 2384 James Street, Syracuse, New York, 13206. For more information, contact the theater. The phone number is 315-463-9240, or check the website. Not only will you get to see really cool anime on the big screen, but there will also be tons of giveaways of swag. And the best part is, this event is completely free and open to the public. The schedule for the next 3 weeks includes, tonight, September 21st, they'll be showing Nabari no O and Sergeant Frog. The next showing, October 19th, they'll be showing Blast Writer and Romeo X Juliet. And finally, on November 16th, they'll be showing Bamboo Blade and Spice and Wolf. And again, this is going to be a regular event every third Monday, so check out the Anime Syracuse website. Because they'll be adding future events as they plan them. Shows begin at 7 o'clock. And yes, you can cosplay if you like, just as long as your costume is not too elaborate or too tall or too wide. So in other words, you know, you don't want to like be poking the eye out of the person next to you or having a huge sword or hairpiece blocking the view of the people behind you. Basically, be sensible and considerate. The Jam Project is joining a growing list of artists who are making their songs available on the U.S. iTunes Music Store. The Jam Project is a supergroup of popular musical artists from dozens of anime projects. Its current members include Hironobu Kageyama, Masaaki Endo, Hiroshi Kitadani, Masami Okui, and Yoshiki Fukuyama. Currently, they have an 11-song lineup on the US iTunes Store, including music from Nugetter Robo, Robonimal Panda Z, The Robomation, X-Driver, and Super Robot Wars. Of course, most songs are in Japanese, but they're also offering some English versions of No Border and Hero. These songs are also available as iPhone ringtones. This is the start of a larger push into North America by Lantis, the music subsidiary of the Bandai Namco Group. They'll reportedly be adding more songs every 2 or 3 weeks or so, including music from The Melancholy of Haruhi Suzumiya, Lucky Star, and other anime, as well as Namco games. In fact, just recently they added some music from the Soul Law and True Tears anime, Ira Yuki's Colorless Wind, and Koi Shika Nakata songs from Sola are now up on the iTunes Store, as well as Euphonious's Reflectia and Electo songs from True Tears. Other artists that they plan on putting music from include Aya Hirano and Ali Project. In a September 3rd press release, Sony Music Entertainment hinted at the imminent release of the Ultraviolet Code 044 anime in the U.S., This anime adopts the 2006 live-action Ultraviolet movie starring Mila Jovovich. The anime premiered in Japan last year. Osamu Dezaki, who's also responsible for Ashita no Joe and Aim for the Ace and Lupin Third movies, worked with the animators of Madhouse and Tezuka Productions to produce this anime. It tells the story of the main character, 044, a female genetically engineered warrior who is voiced by Romi Paku, who also voiced Fullmetal Alchemist's Ed and Nana's Nana Osaki. Singer-songwriter Becca has already revealed at Otakon 2009 in July that she is voice acting the part of 044, although at the time she was not certain of the American release plans. Now, the strange thing is that the Ultraviolet Code 044 anime is still available as a fan sub on AnimeSuki, so you might want to check it out while it's still there. It's a really well-done series. It's dark and moody and, honestly, a lot better than the movie that it's based on. So, check it out. Shuho Sato, the mangaka responsible for Say Hello to Blackjack, Umizaru, and the Isle of Toku mangas, recently wrote a blog entry saying that he earned about 100,000 yen, or about $1,100 US, the first day that he started offering manga for sale on a paid online service. This is his attempt at self-publishing his manga online. He already posted about 500 free pages in July, but in this latest round, he has now posted material from his latest work, New Say Hello to Blackjack, within the month of his serialization in Shogakukan's weekly Big Comics Spirits magazine. Under his plan, new works cost 30 yen per installment, while old works cost 10 yen per installment, or about 30 cents and 10 cents, respectively. He did this in response to his perception of the sad state of the manga publishing industry, which led to his decision to self-publish his manga online. He's written several blog posts in the past about his opinion of the industry and the direction that it's going. This follows in the wake of another veteran mangaka, Kazuo Koike, who began publishing his latest Lone Wolf and Cub manga online in April, after his short-lived Jin print magazine ended last year in the middle of the manga's run. Tokyopop recently announced a new online manga program that'll see new manga chapters debuting online on Wednesdays. It launched the program with the first chapter of SciComm Volume 3, which was released online on August 12th. Boys of Summer Volume 2 is currently scheduled to begin online serialization on September 23rd. Other titles that'll be released as part of this program include Earthlight, Pathion High, Undertown, Gyakushu, Cat and Mouse, which are all world manga titles that have previously been discontinued by Tokyopop. Quote, "With the launch of this online initiative, our goal is to increase visibility and demand for such critically acclaimed series as SciComm, Boys of Summer, and others that have, up until now, struggled to find their audience in a challenging retail environment," says Tokyopop associate publisher Marco Pavia. Quote, "We're also exploring an on-demand model to satisfy print edition demand for the online manga series. We'll have more news in the not-too-distant future, so stay tuned." So it'll be interesting to see how the manga industry adapts to this. Sad news for Clamp fans. The combined 42nd, 23rd issue of Kodansha's weekly shonen magazine announced on Wednesday that Clamp will end the Tsubasa Reservoir Chronicles manga in the next issue on September 30th. The regular and deluxe editions for the 28th and final compiled Tsubasa book volume, as well as the second original art collection for the series, will ship simultaneously on November 17th. Along with Holic, Clamp has been drawing Tsubasa since 2003. Del Rey, who publishes both manga in North America, says that it'll ship the 23rd and 24th volumes of Tsubasa next month. The official website of the Charger Girl Juden-chan, Fight Ipatsu Juden-chan anime series, announced via a shocking special video that production on a complete edition is in the works. Unfortunately, we know very little besides that. I mean, for example, what does complete edition mean? A box set? I don't know. Well, only time will tell. Charger Girl is an interesting series based on Bo DeTama's manga about Plug, a mysterious woman who came to our world from a parallel world with the ability to charge up dejected people. I say interesting because, well, let's just say there's, of course, ecchi involved and other stuff. You'll just have to see it for yourself. The series recently completed its 12-episode run in Japan, and Crunchyroll has all the episodes here in the States, so definitely check it out. Hey, are you an Akira Kurosawa fan? You know, famed director, writer, producer, editor, probably best known for his Seven Samurai movie? Well, if you are, then I have some great news for you. Criterion, who's the publisher famous for well-done collector-grade DVD releases, recently announced that they're planning a massive box set of Kurosawa's works, which is rumored to hit shelves December 8th, just in time for Christmas. The bad news is you have to be pretty flush to afford this. Rumors are that the set will be priced at $400. The good news, though, it's going to be a fairly complete collection of Kurosawa's works. It's rumored to include 25 out of the 30 films that he's made. The set is already available for pre-order on Amazon. The rumored list of titles includes Sanshiro Shisugata, The Most Beautiful, Sanshiro Sugata Part 2, The Men Who Tread on the Tiger's Tail, No Regrets for Our Youth, One Wonderful Sunday, Drunken Angel, Stray Dog, Scandal, Rashomon, The Idiot, Ikiru, Seven Samurai, yay! I Live in Fear, Throne of Blood, The Lower Depths, The Hidden Fortress, The Bad Sleep Well, Yojimbo, yay! Sanjuro, High and Low, Red Beard, Dodasuka Den, Kagemusha, and Madadayo. The five titles that are rumored to be missing from this set include The Quiet Duel, Dursu Uzala, Ron, Dreams, and Rhapsody in August. Criterion's Eclipse label also announced that they will be releasing Nikatsu films from the 50s and 60s. Nikatsu films of this era are kind of like film noir, potboiler action detective type stuff, so if you're a fan of that, then this will be good news for you. In particular, the Nikatsu Film Company gave their directors near unlimited freedom and put relative unknowns behind the cameras, giving them a chance to create something wild and fantastic. This collection, which is coming out at the end of the month, contains the following films: I Am Waiting, directed by Koryoshi Kuretana; Rusty Knife, directed by Toshio Masuda; Take Aim at the Police Van, directed by Seijun Suzaki; Cruel Gun Story, directed by Takumi Furukawa; and A Cult is My Passport, directed by Takashi Nomura. Finally, if you're a fan of Gunslinger Girl, Funimation recently announced that they'll be releasing the Gunslinger Girl Il Teatrino OVA, as well as the original series, on Blu-ray. Yes! Yes, I like this. Finally, more anime on Blu-ray. Keep it coming, people. Keep it coming. Here's a couple of stories that'll put a smile on your face if you're a K-On! Fan. Oricon, who is, I guess, the Japanese equivalent of the of Billboard. In other words, they're the industry that puts out, like, the top 10 charts and all that stuff, recently reported that the three K-On! Character CDs released on August 26th, the ones for Ritsu, Azusa, and Tsumugi, all made it on the top 10 chart. This is the first time that three releases credited to fictional characters from the same anime have appeared on Oricon's weekly top 10 chart simultaneously. Azusa Nakano's character song, Jajuma Way to Go, rose to number 3. Ritsu Tanaka's Girly Storm Shiso Stick went to number 5. And Tsumugi Kotobuki's Dear My Keys, Kenban no Maho, hit number 6. They sold 28,000, 26,000, and 25,000 copies, respectively. The previous record holder was Macross Frontier, which placed two CD singles at number 7 and number 8, with songs by the characters Cheryl Nome, Ranka Lee, and Bobby Margot on December 24th. Also, Kagiyake Girls, which is the opening theme to K-On!, peaked at number 2 in April and has sold 1,459,000 copies as of this month. Also, Hokago Tea Time, the two-CD mini-album released last month, quote-unquote, performed by the five K-On! Group members' characters, became the first anime character CD released to top either the weekly album or singles charts. If you're not familiar with K-On!, you gotta check it out. It's a 2009 anime adapted from Kakifly's four-panel comedy manga about a budding high school band. It's really good, lots of moe, and some decent musical pieces to boot. Check it out. It's currently available on fansub at AnimeSuki. But are we ready for a K-On! Live-action drama? According to a posting found on the Japanese forum Tuchan, the Japanese broadcaster TBS is said to be contemplating a live-action drama version of K-On!. Of course, this is Tuchan we're talking about, so you want to take that rumor with a very large grain of salt. But if this is true, really, we really don't know what to think. TBS has had a spotty history of live-action dramas. Their last attempt, a drama adaptation of long-running police manga Kochikame, let's just say it bombed fantastically. And K-On! Fans are rather disturbed at this rumor that TBS is working on a K-On! Live-action version. So, obviously, the proof will be in the pudding. We'll just have to see what happens if this is indeed true, which we don't know if it is or not. But it's definitely something to keep on your radar if you're a K-On! Fan. Nagaru Tanigawa, who's the author of the famous Haruhi Suzumiya light novels, has supposedly finally started work on the long-anticipated but hugely delayed Suzumiya Haruhi no Kyogaku, or The Shock of Haruhi Suzumiya, which is the first Haruhi novel to come out in many years. Previously, they announced that this book would be due in 2007, but it always turned out to have lengthy delays, and many suspected that the work had even been abandoned. But apparently that's not the case. In a recent edition of The Sneaker, the author is described as being in the process of writing the novel. There is, of course, an interesting possibility that he long ago succumbed to writer's block or totally lost interest in the series and only now is finally doing it because he's getting his arm twisted. So, if this is the case, well, it may be a bad sign as to the quality of the work. But again, only time will tell. But at least now we know that he is working on it, so there you go. If you've been a listener to Otaku no Podcast for any length of time, you'll know that I am a tremendous fan of Mahoromatic. I forget how many times I've talked about that series, but it's just one of my favorites. Classic Gainax, just beautiful animation, funny story, quirky characters. Well, there's some good news for Mahoromatic fans such as myself. Recently, the official site has opened for Mahoromatic Tadaima Okairi, a two-part television special scheduled to premiere on the BS, TBS satellite and cable channel on October 17th and 24th. The television's premiere will be followed by a DVD and Blu-ray release scheduled for December 23rd. I would have loved a third season, but, you know, I'll take what I can get at this point. The good news is that most of the cast and crew is returning from the previous Mahoromatic excursions. Shoji Saiki is returning from Mahoromatic Summer Special to direct, and the Gainax Studio is, of course, returning as well. Kazuhiro Takamura is returning from every previous Marhomatic anime project to design the characters and oversee the animation production. Also reprising their roles are most of the cast members and the musical composer Toshio Masuda. Finally, Tatsuhiko Urahata, who also did Strawberry Panic and Ichigo 100%, is writing the scripts based on Bo Detama and Bunjuro Nakayama's original Mahoromatic manga. I hope a fan subgroup picks this up quickly. I just can't get enough of Mahoro. Kawaii. Moe. Okay, enough of that. Are you a Dragon Ball fan? Are you an MMORPG fan? Great news! CJ Internet and Bandai Korea are jointly developing an MMORPG based on Akira Toriyama's fighting manga, Dragon Ball. They recently opened a new teaser site and have posted a trailer video. This video shows new scenes not seen in last year's promotional movie, including a shot of a mysterious unnamed character at the very end. Ooh. This MMO was originally slated to open in Korea last year and in Japan this year, but due to delays, is now slated for closed beta testing in Korea next month. The game is being jointly developed by Japanese and Korean staffers and is set 250 years after Toriyama's original manga, during Age 1000 era. The world is at peace until mysterious invaders appear. They promise that players can recreate the feel of the original manga with battles in Dragon Ball's signature Tenkaichi Budokai tournaments and time machine quests. Toriyama is supervising the designs of the characters and monsters. I can just see it now. Vegeta, how many subscribers do we have? Over 9,000! Sorry, had to be done. Couldn't resist. Bandai recently announced that it'll be joining the growing world of online video streaming with its Bandai Channel offering, which will be rolling out in Japan in October and to the rest of Asia, America, and Europe next year. Bandai has already had some success in this field with its rapid turnaround and broadcasting of Kurokami within 24 hours of the Japanese airing of the episodes, and they've already also kicked off a fairly successful YouTube channel. This appears to be the mechanism behind their statement back in April that they'd begin streaming Gundam in 10 languages starting by the end of this year. Bandai is taking an interesting approach, however. The video distribution will be centralized in Bandai Japan, and all other sites in the world will be pulling videos from there. This is probably their attempt to prevent the Funimation One Piece debacle, where some enterprising hackers were able to guess Funimation website's structure and pull the new episode of One Piece off before it was officially released. Sci-Fi Channel, I refuse to call them by their absolutely silly name, Siffy, recently added a new series, Monster, to their Annie Monday block. This series is based on Naoki Urasawa's super suspense manga of the same name. The first episodes will start running on October 12th. There'll be two weekly episodes during the last three Mondays in October. Other programs that'll be airing on this Annie Monday block include Kaido Maru and the motion comic versions of the Street Fighter and Voltron comic adaptations on October 5th, with more episodes of the motion comics filling out the schedules on October 12th and 19th, and a repeat showing of Macross Plus on October 26th. Finally, I bring you news of something that I really wish the U.S. government would consider doing, making politics interesting and not boring. In Japan, the Ministry of Economics, Trade and Industry, or METI, recently published a manga entitled Nihon no Mirai wa Nozomi ni Omakase, Manga de Wakaru Keizai Seichu Senryaku. Quite a mouthful. The English translation is Count on Our Hopes, Nozomi, for Japan's Future, Understanding the New Economic Growth Policy through Manga. This manga uses a charismatic high school management consultant named Nozomi Mitsuno, a wordplay on hope for light, and her female rival, and it's targeted at high school and college students and yuppies in an attempt to make understanding METI's new economic policies fun. The manga was written by Midori Natsu and illustrated by Hitori Renda. I love the quote that one of the authors made. At least some people will read it, if only for the moe. Now let's get on to some anime convention news.
anime convention alert.
The New York Anime Festival will be hitting the Jacob Javits Convention Center this weekend, September 25th through 27th. Guests include Yoshiyuki Tomino, the director of Mobile Suit Gundam, and Yui Makino, the voice of Sakura in Tsubasa Reservoir Chronicles. Films that will be premiering at the festival include Gurren Lagann the Movie, Childhood's End, Sankarol, and 20th Century Boys. Of course, there will also be tons of other events, so definitely check the New York Anime Festival website for more details. One event in particular is being brought by a collaboration between New York Anime Festival and Super Gorious, the Far East to East Showcase, or FETES, F-E-T-E-S. This promises to bring a night of innovative music that brings together four of the best musical artists from both the Far East and the East Coast. Concert will be held at the studio at Webster Hall, 125 East 11th Street in New York City, on Sunday the 27th. Doors open at 5:30 p.m. and the concert starts at 6:30. The musical lineup includes Koku Syoku Sumire, Echo Stream, Swinging Popsicle, and Gelatine. Tickets are $10 in advance and $15 the day of the show and are available now at ticketweb.com and websterhall.com. The show is open to audiences of all ages. More information can be found at the FETES press panel on Saturday, September 26th at the New York Anime Festival. They'll also have a booth all weekend long at the festival where various FETES artists will appear. Here's some information on the bands. From Koku Syoku Sumire's press blurb, "The dark sounds of Baroque and Cabaret unite for a unique two-piece band known as Koku Syoku Sumire. At the center of Kokyosu Sumire, or Black Violet, are Yuka, a genuine soprano songstress with the attraction of a little devil, and Sachi, an exceptional violinist and model who effortlessly strikes adorable poses. The girls express with extravagant freedom motifs based on internationally known fairy tales such as Little Red Riding Hood, The Little Match Girl, and Hansel and Gretel, while adopting elements from such music genres as chansons and classical music. Formed in 2004, this musical unit has acquired a unique position in the Japanese musical scene and the world. Koku Syoku Sumire toured France at the end of November 2007 and are ready to enchant New York City at New York Anime Festival." Here's what Swinging Popsicle has to say. "Japanese indie music veterans Swinging Popsicle play pop rock music in amazing fashion with incredible vocals, tasty guitar work, and catchy lyrics. After starting strong with multiple Sony label releases, Swinging Popsicle continued to build their international fan base with their independent releases of Change and Orange. Their album, Transit, features the hits I Just Wanna Kiss You and Girl Meets Boy. Performing to regular sold-out live shows, the band continues to develop new material for their full-length album, Go On, which features Rainbounds, Clash, and Chocolate Soul Music. Swinging Popsicle was nominated as Best Japanese Rock Band by Shoujo Beat Magazine. Echo Stream. Echo Stream is a band that succeeds in creating music that can draw the audience into its world of rich and vivid emotion. Deep grooves, driving guitars, and a dark and beautiful ambiance provide a perfectly crafted world for emotion-injected vocals to thrive in. Live performances are more like theatrical experiences than concerts. Echo Stream's ability to connect emotionally with its audience is the band's true strength. Their fans come back time and time again for a chance to relive this intense experience. For never having been on extended tour, Echo Stream has racked up a lot of credit around the eastern half of the nation and opened up for international touring acts such as Blood, Anti-Feminism, and Phantasmagoria. For more information about this unique band, go to myspace.com/echostream. And finally, here's the information on Gelatine. In Japan, there was an all-girl punk band called Ten Yen Anakinoko, begun by singer Seiko when she was only 15 years old. This band ended after playing in New York City in 1995, and they have since become a legend. 5 years later, a Ten Yen Anakinoko reunion show with new guitarist Jun became the beginning of Gelatine, a band created to let the great songs of Ten Yen Anakinoko come to life once again, as well as to craft new intense music. Gelatine's long-awaited first album, Ji Ji Gai, was released in January 2009. It is an embodiment of what Gelatine has been aiming to capture for all these years. Experience the Japanese horror, comical, freak punk metal that is Gelatine at Fetties. But wait, there's more. Japanese pop group AKB48 also announced that they'll be holding their U.S. debut at New York City Anime Festival. They'll appear at New York Anime Festival as special musical guests. AKB48 will hold a Q&A session, autographing, and short concert at the Jacob Javits Center on Saturday, September 26th. The musical group will present a free concert in NYC's Webster Hall on Sunday, September 27th. Details of their Webster Hall concert will be revealed soon, so keep an eye on their website. AKB48 is a female music group created in 2005 by songwriter Yasushi Akimoto. The group was born under the concept of Idols You Can Visit, and is based in Akihabara, the center of Japanese anime and manga culture. Members of AKB48 regularly appear in movies, television shows, and theater, and they are on top of Japan's pop culture consciousness, singing at Japan's biggest New Year's Eve broadcast, joining Prime Minister Taro Aso for cherry blossom viewing, hosting their own weekly television show, and collaborating with artist Takashi Murakami on multiple projects. AKB48 consists of a total of 67 members divided into four groups, A, K, B, and Trainee, and they perform almost every day at their own theater in Akihabara. In October 2008, SKE48, an AKB48 sister group, was established in Sakae in Nagoya. AKB48's New York City performance will be their first visit to the U.S. With all this talk about the New York Anime Festival, I found an interesting bit of news about their plans for 2010. They announced that they'll be partnering up with New York Comic Con for next year's event. Both events will be held at the same time and the same place next year. They're doing this to balance out events with the launch of Chicago Comics and Entertainment Expo in April of 2010. Both the New York Comic Convention and New York Anime Festival are moving to a permanent October date. For us here in the West, this will be kinda sorta like Anime Expo deciding to merge with San Diego Comic-Con. The two organizations said that both staff and fans agreed that this merge was a good idea, although there are some fans that worry that the New York Anime Festival will sort of lose its focus amongst the greater comic convention crowd. Only time will tell, however. And finally, the Society for the Promotion of Japanese Animation, the SPJA, which is the parent organization for Anime Expo, recently announced a new CEO. Mr. Michael Latanzio will be taking over immediately as president and CEO of the organization. He has previous leadership experience with companies such as Universal Studios Incorporated, Universal Studios Japan, NBC Universal, and Westfield LLC. He's earned a BS degree in business management and has also attained an MBA in executive management. His task is to oversee the strategic vision of the SPJA, its day-to-day operations, and the development of Anime Expo. Anime Expo is kind of an interesting convention in that it started out as a fan convention. A bunch of guys from various anime clubs got together and started a convention. And in the process, it's moved between several cities, several locations. But now it's a very much kind of industry-focused thing. A lot of industry goes there. And like any industry group, the AX organization has kind of grown this sort of corporate structure, corporate culture to go along with it. Although their corporate structure has some atypical elements. For example, over the years, the organization's experimented with monetary compensation to key staff positions, including the chairperson and division heads. In 2006, division heads and their assistants were compensated. The Anime Expo chairperson position was a compensated position in 2005 and 2006. The compensation paid to these individuals, however, was not really a full-time salary. In other words, it was below minimum wage as calculated on an hourly basis. Instead, the compensation represents a means of compensating key staffers who have nearly full-time responsibilities in managing a convention of this size and scope. Aside from the CEO and the CFO who are paid, the SPJA also has one full-time office manager. They also hire consultants for various outsourced functions, such as public relations and legal representation or consultation. As of March 27th of this year, CEO Truly Karahashi, who was with the SPJA for 11 years, left the organization. The details of her leaving are not known. I'm hoping that this will continue to remain business as usual for AX. They certainly have done a lot better job on things this year. Registration went quite smoothly. They actually went with an external company, Experient, for that. And, well, if you've listened to our past episode, a couple episodes back, our big group discussion on AX, you'll basically know our thoughts on that. But hopefully AX 2010 will rock just as hard as AX 2009 did. Let's take a walk on the weird side.
Weird Japan.
Okay, we all know times are tough, the economy sucks, everything's going to heck in a handbasket. Apparently things, at least in Japan, things are so bad that even hardened criminals are having to stoop to new lows. Case in point, two individuals connected with the infamous Yamaguchi-gumi Yakuza group, Japanese gangsters, Hiroshi Inaba, 42, and an unnamed accomplice, were recently arrested and accused of conspiring to steal a local confectioner's Pico-chan statue. Pico-chan is a very creepy-looking mascot of the Fujiya Candy Company. I mean, you need to see the statue's picture. It's just... If I was a kid, I'd have nightmares for weeks after looking at this statue. Anyways, these two bumbling criminals dragged the 4-foot-tall, 20-pound statue out of the store and placed it onto the back seat of their car. And by the way, the estimated market value of this thing is about $400 US. Times are tough, man. Didn't know they were that tough, but they're tough. You should definitely check the linked article, because the police reenactment video of this crime is just too funny. Just hilarious. It's hilarious. This next story, strictly speaking, isn't really a weird Japan story because it happened here in the U.S., but I have to mention it just because of the fact that the person involved obviously has watched quite a few samurai anime or maybe some samurai films. A medical student at the prestigious Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore was recently the target of a home invasion and robbery. Not unusual per se, except for the way that he dealt with his assailant. This man, who lived with several other students, had recently suffered a similar break-in where laptops and a PlayStation were stolen. In this latest break-in, a 40-year-old career criminal who was just released from prison with a long history of burglaries, was discovered breaking in via the garage. And this med student said, okay, enough is enough. He called the cops, but meanwhile, while he was waiting for the boys in blue to arrive, the student confronted the burglar, armed with a katana. Yes! The burglar lunged at the student, who, quote, then retaliated by striking him with a samurai sword, severed his left hand, and gave severe lacerations to the upper torso, unquote, fatally injuring him. Yes! I love the police officer's comment regarding the unusual weapon. Quote, I think everyone has the right to first of all defend themselves and defend their home, and if this individual felt that a samurai sword was an appropriate tool to do so, I'm not in a position to say that's good or bad. Love it, love it. Police have not charged the student because they judged that it was an act of self-defense. You gotta give mad props to the guy. That's style. I mean, yeah, you could get a baseball bat or a gun or something, but a sword, that's elegant. That's just like the whole, you know, Star Wars lightsabers versus blasters thing, you know? You gotta give him credit for that. It has been said that imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. If this is indeed true, then the Chinese are probably the most flattering people on the planet. We all know the Chinese are infamous for their acts of piracy and brazen flaunting of copyright laws. Well, now they've taken to ripping off anime. A Chinese company working in partnership with a state propaganda department has wholesale plagiarized Makoto Shinkai's popular 5 centimeters per second anime. Their version, called Soul's Window, is ironically billed as a moral anime, a genre which dominates China's heavily censored animation industry. Themes that are explored in this anime include the selfless dedication to party and state, and the heroic actions of the People's Liberation Army. Those all play a central role in this tale. Unfortunately, Chinese viewers don't really go for this stuff. They say it's tedious preaching, and they just don't like it. And, well, this hatred is cited as one of the problems faced by the industry, coupled with a complete lack of artistic freedom and the inability to export such naked propaganda. What's even funnier is that this anime is apparently co-produced by the local Communist Party propaganda department, which shows just how deeply the Chinese government cares about such matters. State censors have approved its healthy ideological content for nationwide release on TV and at cinemas, with 52 episodes planned. But that's not all. They've also blatantly ripped off both Naruto and Pokemon. China's top state-run broadcaster is being accused of plagiarizing elements of Pokemon and Naruto in its latest children's anime, not long after the whole 5 centimeters per second incident, mind you. The broadcaster vehemently denies the charges, saying that there is a difference between plagiarism and imitation. Now that's a very fine razor's edge that they're walking. Chinese Central Television, or CCTV, under the direct control of the Chinese Communist Party's Central Propaganda Department, recently began airing an anime, and this is a very loose translation, Dinosaur Baby Holy Heroes. love it. But the Chinese anime fans soon spotted the fact that the anime was copying character designs, story, and music from a variety of Japanese anime, most notably Pokemon, Digimon, and Naruto. The director of CCTV's children's channel was soon confronted, but he angrily denied all wrongdoing, saying it was a matter for the studio responsible, and then asking those doubting the work to consider the difference between imitation and plagiarism. Bold words. Because the government bans non-Chinese anime from its TV due to fear of foreign influence, and to foster homegrown anime, the domestic Chinese producers have struggled to satisfy demand by generally producing anime of, very low quality, loathed by many Chinese for its highly propaganda nature. Adding fuel to the fire, Chinese premier Wen Xiaobao recently decried the lack of Chinese anime, which incited a flurry of online support with Chinese net users vigorously denouncing Japanese anime. He publicly lamented the current poverty of Chinese visual culture. Quote, "There are times when I watch TV anime with my grandchild, but there are always foreign works like Ultraman and so on. And few are domestically produced. We should be cultivating a domestic anime industry." Never mind the fact that Ultraman isn't even an anime. It's actually one of those superhero tokusatsu live-action things. Anyways, Ultraman is currently all the rage among the youth of China. But parents are anxious about it. They criticize it by saying, "Ultraman is Japanese. All he does is fight. Have all the Chinese who can make anime disappeared?" No, they just make really crappy anime. More extreme voices of support are also heard, "Kill Ultraman and all the other Japanese anime." China has recently been working to strengthen its domestic anime industry, with a variety of successful titles being brought to air, such as Pleasant Goat and Big Big Wolf, a hit children's show with over 500 episodes aired since its inception in 2005. Honestly, though, they need some more work in the coming up with titles that make sense department. However, heavy restrictions on the foreign programming allowed also ensure that fans of international anime have no legitimate recourse for viewing their favorite titles, although mass market anime such as Doraemon or Detective Conan is, of course, in a different league to niche Japanese titles. The Chinese populace is said to be generally critical of their country's anime output so far, characterizing it as insipid, tedious, and preachy, suggesting more effort is required. The Japanese publisher East Press recently sold 45,000 copies of, get this, a manga version of Nazi dictator Adolf Hitler's manifesto, Mein Kampf, amid renewed calls to drop the manifesto's ban in Germany. Now, Germany is, of course, you know, where the whole Nazi thing happened, and they're rather touchy on the issue. It's been illegal to publish Mein Kampf in Germany since 1945. They also have, for example, banned any depiction of Nazism in video games and other cultural works. So they're really touchy about the subject. Anyways, the government enforces these bans through an unusual application of copyright laws. Since the German state of Bavaria inherited the printing rights upon Hitler's suicide towards the end of World War II, the copyright holder, which is currently the Bavarian Finance Ministry, can prevent others from publishing the book in Germany. However, since the copyrights are set to expire in 2015, the 70th anniversary of Hitler's death, some government and Jewish figures have called for publication under controlled conditions. German-Jewish author Raphael Seligman called for its publication as early as 2004. In June, the Bavarian Minister of Science and Research advocated a decently prepared and well-grounded critical edition to counter charlatans and neo-Nazis who could seize this disgraceful work when Bavaria's rights run out. Stefan Kramer, General Secretary of the Central Council of Jews in Germany, endorsed the possibility of an annotated edition on August 5th to prevent neo-Nazis from profiting from it and to remove many of its false, persistent myths. However, Bavaria upheld the ban last month and recently rejected the Munich-based Institute of Contemporary History's request to publish the book. Bavarian Finance Ministry spokesperson Horst Wolf said, "Scholarly as the aims of the Institute are, we won't lift the ban as it may play straight into the hands of the far right." On the separate matter of the manga version, the ministry told the Asahi Shinbun paper, "We have trouble considering manga as an appropriate medium for critically presenting this problematic material." Ouch. Kosuke Maruo, a 32-year-old editor at East Press, explained why his company produced the manga version of Mein Kampf. Quote, "It is a famous book, but there are few who have read it. I think it is studying material for knowing Hitler, a man synonymous with the devil, and what sort of thinking created that level of tragedy," end quote. While his company had no expectations on the manga's sales, it has sold 45,000 copies since last November. That's above the 35,000 copy average of the other books of the manga de Dokuha series from East Press. East Press publishes 43 manga de Dokuha guides for Karl Marx's Das Kapital, Dante's Divine Comedy, Fyodor Dostoevsky's The Brothers Karamazov and Crime and Punishment, Johann Wolfgang von Goethe's Faust, Franz Kafka's The Metamorphosis, Niccolo Machiavelli's The Prince, Friedrich Nietzsche's Thus Spoke Zarathustra, Antoine de Saint-Exupéry's Night Flight, William Shakespeare's King Lear, Stendhal's The Red and the Black, Leo Tolstoy's War and Peace, and other titles. One of the titles, Kenji Miyazawa's Night on the Galactic Railroad, has also been made into an anime movie by Gisaburo Sugi and Group TAC. Manga pioneer Osamu Tezuka created Adolf, a 5-volume fictional manga portrayal of 3 men named Adolf, including Adolf Hitler. Viz Media published Tezuka's Adolf manga in North America. I don't really know how to react to this, except with this.
When the Hura says he is the master race, the hire, right in the Hura's face, not to love the Hura is a great disgrace. So the hire, right in the Hura's face.
Now, I always thought Japan was basically an anything-goes country when it comes to anime and manga portrayal of, well, sex. Apparently, though, there are some subjects even too hot for Japan. At the recent Comiket 76, a certain doujin circle was forced to pull its assortment of Ero figures for being too hot for sale. This was kind of weak because those same figures were readily available at tons of anime shops across the country. The figures are the products of Kyumaya, originally a more typical doujinshi maker, before focusing on producing Ero figures that are sold at doujin events and via consignment shops. Well, this group received a notice from the Comiket officials that read, "Notice of Comiket figure sale suspension. Due to the inappropriateness of Kyumaya's figures, nether regions, i.e. crotch, groin, the sale of the figures at this year's Natsukan has been suspended.
Taking into consideration the bother caused to the Comiket Preparation Committee, special attention will be paid in the future to ensure that something of this manner does not occur a second time. Again, I would like to apologize here for the nuisance caused to the gentleman that had to come to the Kimuya Circle booth. Furthermore, the sales suspension only affects Comiket. The plans for consignment sales at Tora no Ana for Cho Kangofu, Super Nurse, Kotone-chan, and Akumashi, Evil Witch Girl, Normal version, will continue as planned. Plans for what to do with the event-exclusive Gal Mashi figure are still undecided.
Naturally, this caused some questioning and speculation among the anime fan community, so one fan took it upon himself to order two of each figure concerned for more in-depth analysis. Yeah, that's the ticket. And you'll see the results of said analysis in the pictures posted in the article that's linked off of our show notes.
Both figures look to be of a very good build quality, although the large-breasted witch's face might be off-putting to most, although some of the posters on Sankaku Complex disagree with this assessment.
The unassembled state the figures are sold as shows the detail paid to the girl's arrow features.
In other words, their nether regions.
Which probably was the reason for the figure's removal from Comiket. In any case, the figures are quite accomplished for doujin products, especially Kotone-chan, and their banning by the Comiket authorities can only add to their allure.
Yep, that really backfired on them.
Kotone-chan, by the way, also came with a small Aero Doujinshi as a furoku, which I guess is some sort of pre-promotional item.
Finally, I bring you bad news on the coming zombie apocalypse. We all know that it's coming. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. We also know where these future zombies are being trained. Yes, in the land of the rising sun.
Fuji-Q Highland Amusement Park has an area of the park called Saikyo Senritsu Meikyu, or Ultimate Horror Maze, where all sorts of staples from various horror movies are placed to scare the visitors. Anyways, they were rather displeased with the performance of their zombies. They just weren't scary enough. So they sent them to zombie boot camp. And you gotta see the video that's linked off of the article here. This really is like zombie boot camp. I mean, it's like basic training for zombie attack. So now, as you sit in pain, having your brains eaten out by the living dead, remember, don't blame Canada, blame Japan. Okay, enough of this. Let's get on to the good stuff.
The main event.
So by now, I'm sure most people will agree that we are living in tough economic times. I mean, the economy's going to heck in a handbasket. Money's tight. Unemployment's going up. People want to, you know, spend less on things. We're looking for ways to save. Unfortunately, this presents a problem for the anime fan. I mean, anime costs money. How are we going to feed our need? Well, this is my inspiration for this two-part series, which I'm calling Anime on the Cheap. Tonight I'll be covering part one, dealing with anime on physical media, DVDs, a Blu-ray. In the next episode, I'll be covering part two, which will deal with watching anime online on the computer, download, streaming. Now, some of the things I'm going to mention may seem blindingly obvious to you, but maybe not to some people. So I figure it's worth mentioning anyways. If you're sitting there going, I know all this stuff already, just keep listening because I'll probably get to something that you may not have thought about. So give it a try. So one way to watch anime cheaply is, well, not to get anime on your own, but to watch someone else's. Group viewing parties are a great way of doing this. A couple of friends I know have anime nights, you know, basically they pick one night a week or maybe once, you know, twice a month or something where they have all their friends get together and basically bring over whatever anime that they happen to have and they watch it. Very easy to set up, you know, just find a group of friends that are into anime and say, hey, let's get together. Each person obviously brings selections from his or her own individual anime collections. So obviously the selection that you have will vary on the individual tastes of whoever you get together. So find somebody with a fairly big living room and a, you know, decent TV and sound system. Or something else you might want to consider is that, especially if you live in an apartment or a condo, some apartment complexes have central clubhouses or meeting rooms that you can rent fairly cheaply. And some of them come with, you know, they might have nice TV or a projector or something that you can use to view the anime on. Then this is a great, you know, great way of socializing, you know, meeting friends. You know, friends can invite friends of their own, so you'll have your friend of a friend of a friend sort of thing, and then you get to meet new people, you know, and find out about new anime series that you may not have heard of or you might have been curious about. You might also want to consider having food, especially if you're gathering for, you know, an entire afternoon. It'd be nice to have something to eat. You can always do the, you know, order a pizza thing or order takeout Chinese food. But one thing I like to do is there's this great kind of sushi called inari. It's basically seasoned tofu pouches stuffed with sushi rice. It's ridiculously easy to make, and it's quite inexpensive as well. Basically, you go get some, make a big pot of rice, and then you go get a bunch of these inari pouches. They're pretty cheap. You can get them at any, almost any Asian market. And then for the sushi vinegar, they actually have pre-made sushi vinegar, so all you have to do is get a bottle of that and pour it over the rice once it's finished. So you set out a big bowl of sushi rice and a big plate of inari pouches, and basically everybody can sit there and stuff their own inari pouches and eat them while watching anime. It's ridiculously cheap, pretty easy, and it's fun for the whole family. You might also want to look into hooking up with an anime club, especially if you live in a town with a university or community college. A lot of times they have anime clubs, so check with the your local schools. A lot of times they have campus activity centers, you know, where the various official on-campus sanctioned groups are listed. Or sometimes they just have, you know, bulletin boards where groups can tack up their own advertisements. So definitely look around. Ask friends, you know, friends might know. Most clubs usually don't have any dues, although if they provide, you know, it might be, for example, if they provide snacks, you know, they might ask you to help contribute toward the cost of the snacks. And of course, each club has its own policies and its own schedules as to, you know, how often they have anime meetings and that sort of thing. And of course, the selection of titles available at any given anime screening depends on whatever people who organize the event have in their collections. Some anime clubs might have corporate sponsorship, so that might also be whatever the company, Funimation or whoever, decides to send them. Usually, you know, they'll put up a website or, you know, send out a mailing list announcement saying, you know, what titles will be viewed at any given night. Usually for a club, they have pretty good viewing conditions. If it's on a school campus, you know, they'll probably be able to get equipment from the AV department. So you probably have at least a big TV, maybe even a projector screen and a fairly good sound system. And of course, the cost for this is free or very nearly free. Also remember that many, well, most anime conventions have anime screening rooms, film or video rooms, sometimes both. Selection, of course, will vary depending on whatever the con organizers decide to bring. And sometimes if a convention is corporate sponsored, whatever the company, Funimation or again, or whoever sends to the anime convention, usually on the website, they'll put up a schedule of what anime will be showing in whatever given room at any given time. And they usually put those up a week or 2 weeks or so before the show. So it's a good idea to check up on the website of the anime convention you're looking at to get their latest schedule. The viewing conditions at these are usually pretty good. You know, usually they have a convention center or something that where they can have a fairly large screen, decent sound system. And of course, at an anime convention, there's tons of other things going on, so there's other things to do besides watching anime. The cost of this, of course, will vary depending on the particular convention. Small conventions, you know, one or two day smaller conventions, usually maybe $20, $30, $40. And for the larger, you know, multi-day conventions can be more like, you know, $60 to $70 or so. But again, there's other things to do at an anime convention besides watching anime. So it's a pretty good value proposition. You also might want to check into your TV or satellite listing schedule. There's several TV networks that now have anime programming blocks. Cartoon Network, of course, has Adult Swim. The Sci-Fi Channel, who's now known by the ridiculous name SIFI, has, I guess they have an Anime Monday block. There's various other networks that are dedicated to anime, such as the Anime Network. So definitely check, you know, your cable listings or your satellite provider listings to see what they have. Also, sometimes local channels sometimes run anime. For example, I remember in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, late 80s, early 90s, that sort of time frame, one of the local PBS stations actually had anime. I remember they showed Evangelion and probably some other titles as well. Unfortunately, these sort of things may not always make it on the TV guide listings, so that's sort of a word of mouth thing. You might just want to, you know, channel surf. But definitely check, you know, TV and satellite. That's something to look into. Okay, so now you've seen all of the anime that your friends have. There's not a convention for another, you know, X number of months. What do? Well, you could rent anime. First place to check is, oddly enough, your local library. Especially some of the larger libraries sometimes have videos that they rent out. And it's conceivable that some of them might even have some anime. Probably not the best selection, but it's definitely worth looking into. And the price of a library card is usually pretty inexpensive. So check with your library, give them a call. They have a website, check that out. There's also, of course, the corner video store. And I'm not just talking about Blockbuster or Hollywood or the big guys like that, but I'm also talking about the little mom-and-pop video stores. This is especially a good place to look if you live in an ethnic neighborhood or a large city that has an ethnic neighborhood, like a Japan town or something like that. And these locations, they may not obviously look like video rental locations. For example, a lot of Asian supermarkets that I see actually have little video rental counters where you can rent stuff. I see those in other places too, like maybe Asian dry cleaners, that sort of thing. Unfortunately, especially in these Asian ethnic shops, they may not have English dubbed anime. You might have English subtitles, or there may not be any English at all. It could just all be in just straight Japanese. So you might want to ask them or, you know, rent a title or two to check it out. An example of this is in San Francisco, in Japantown, the Japantown Center Mall, there's a place called Japan Video and Media that has, not only do they sell anime, but they also rent an anime, and they have a pretty good selection. Their discs actually have English, either in dubs or subtitles. But again, especially if it's a smaller store, like something you might find in an Asian supermarket or something, their videos might just be in Japanese. But if you understand Japanese, hey, knock yourself out. Or if you have a friend that does, you know, that might be a good idea as well. Invite him over and have him translate for you. Finally, there's online rental companies. With the birth of the internet, a lot of companies have moved online. Of course, the biggest one of these is Netflix. They're sort of the 800-pound gorilla of the online video rental space. They've been in the business since 97, headquartered in California, but they have over 100 shipping locations all over the country. They boast a collection of over 100,000 titles, including Blu-ray titles. Of course, most of these are the usual American movies and TV shows, but they actually have quite a sizable anime collection. Their selection, I found, is generally pretty good. They have pretty much all the new popular stuff, and they have a lot of the older titles as well. Now, in my testing, I did run into two or three series where they were missing a few discs of them, but these were very rare. As I said, their selection is generally quite good. Unfortunately, this might change as time goes on, especially with older titles that have gone out of print, such as when Genion and ADV went out of business. You know, maybe some of their titles may not be available anymore. So as time goes on and people rent out these series and the discs get worn out or broken, in the future we might start to see some discs becoming unavailable. So far, that's mostly not the case, but that's something to keep an eye out on. Netflix does a pretty good job of replacing broken discs when they possibly can. But again, if a title is out of print, that's kind of impossible. Some of the discs that I found on Netflix are listed with a wait time, either short-term wait, medium-term, or long-term wait. This probably means that they don't have very many copies of that particular disc, and you know, all the copies that they have are rented out. Usually, though, this only means a delay of a couple extra days or maybe a week or two. Although, one time I remember I was waiting for a disc that said long-term wait, and it took me several months, maybe 6 months or so, to get that disc. But, to their credit, I did eventually get it. Now, Netflix ships discs fast. I mean, they send you an email letting you know that they're shipping a disc to you. I usually get the disc the very next day. This is no doubt because of the 100 shipping centers located throughout the country. No matter where you live, there's probably a shipping center fairly close to you. Discs are usually in pretty good condition. They do a pretty good job of keeping the discs, you know, in circulation. Although, for maybe 1 out of 50, I would say, discs that I've gotten are scratched or something. In most of those cases, I'm usually able to get the disc to play, you know, if I just give it a rinse underwater and maybe buff it out with the old toothpaste trick. Basically, put a spot of toothpaste where the scratch is and then kind of buff it out with a toothbrush. But if a disc is so badly scratched that it won't play, or if it's cracked, which happens even less often, Netflix has a pretty good system for reporting that. You go on their website, you click on the problem report button, it asks you what the problem is, does it skip during playback, is it cracked or broken, and then they ship you a replacement the very next day. So that's pretty good. The nice thing about Netflix, actually, the nice thing about all of these online rental services is they have no due dates. Basically, when you get a disc, you can watch it, you can hang on to it as long as you want. There's no late fees. Once you're done with it, it comes with a little prepaid envelope. You drop the disc in the envelope, drop it in the mailbox, boom, you're done. It's really quite slick. The Netflix website is pretty easy to navigate. It's got a lot of cool Web 2.0 technologies. For example, if you hover your mouse cursor over a disc, it'll pop up a little box giving you a description of it, who's the director, who's the actors. And basically, when you want to rent a disc, you add it to what's called your rental queue, basically a list of discs that Netflix will ship from the next time you have a disc available. And on the Netflix website, you can pretty easily reorganize your queue just by dragging and dropping. The website also has some cool social networking kind of features. If you have friends that also use Netflix, you can sort of become their friend on the site. And that way you can like share recommendations, you can share rental histories, that sort of thing. One thing that Netflix does that I really like is it has a concept called profiles. Basically, this is great for families where two or more family members have different tastes. So you want your anime, whereas your wife wants her chick flicks and your son wants his action movies. So each person in the family can have their own profile attached to your Netflix account. Each person gets their own queue and they can manage it as however they see fit. This is really handy. How much does this cost? Anywhere from $9 to $48 a month, depending on how many discs you want to be able to rent out at any given time. So for the $9 a month plan, basically that lets you rent only one DVD at a time, whereas for the $48 a month plan, that lets you have 8 DVDs out at a time, which is great for large families. Now, if you want the capability to rent Blu-ray discs, and a lot of anime is actually coming out on Blu-ray these days, that'll cost you an additional $2 to $9. The bottom line on Netflix is, it's by far the best option that I've found, and it's especially good if maybe you're also interested in the non-anime titles that they have, your sci-fi movies and your TV shows and whatnot. And if you have other people in your family that also want to rent titles, it's definitely a no-brainer with the handy profiles feature on Netflix. Now, most people are familiar with the Blockbuster video rental stores. They've had physical rental stores since 1985. Well, just recently, in 2004, they also branched out into the online video rental service. They're headquartered in Dallas, Texas, and they do have multiple shipping centers throughout the country, but unlike Netflix, they only have about 41 of them. Now, one feature Blockbuster touts on their website is the capability that you can rent a disc from the online Blockbuster, but return it to one of Blockbuster's physical stores and then rent a replacement disc there. Unfortunately, their advertising on this is a little bit misleading. Only some of the Blockbuster physical stores subscribe to this program, not all of them, and you have to pay extra for this privilege. None of the online sources that I could find give a firm estimate as to how many titles Blockbuster stocks, but my estimate is that really it's not nearly as good as Netflix. in my selection of test anime discs that I looked for, they had almost none of them. They had some of the current hot series, but as far as the older back catalog stuff, their selection was just terrible. They do carry Blu-ray discs and HD DVD as well, which is nice if you have a Blu-ray or HD capable player. Blockbuster's website is awfully nice looking, but it's very clunky. In particular, their search function could really use some work. The search is very twitchy. You have to type in exactly the title that you're looking for. It doesn't tolerate things like misspellings, missed punctuation, that sort of thing very well at all. And once you get your search results, the search results page is extremely messy. For example, if you're looking at a series that has multiple discs, you know, like Evangelion has 8 discs to it, sometimes all however many discs of a given series are actually listed under that series, so just clicking one button will add all of them to your queue. But for some series, you actually have to add each disc individually, and they're not grouped all together in the same search page. Very frustrating. Their search could definitely use a lot of work. Their shipping time is good, but it may not be good for you in particular. I actually have a shipping center pretty close to me. There's one in Los Angeles, so I get my discs usually within 1 to 2 days. But again, Blockbuster only has 41 shipping centers as opposed to Netflix's 100. So wherever you are, you may not be located near a shipping center, so the shipping time to you might be worse. Again, if you get a bad disc that won't play, maybe it's cracked or maybe it's scratched beyond repair, Blockbuster has a pretty good way to report this. You just click on the website, click on the disc, and you tell it what the problem is, and they'll ship out a new one to you the next day. Also, Blockbuster does rent video games as well. Unfortunately, Blockbuster does not support the concept of profiles like Netflix does, so it's not ideal if you want to share your rental account with other people in your family. Cost-wise, it's a little bit cheaper than Netflix. For one disc out at a time, they're charging $4 a month, and for 3 discs out at a time, they're charging $16 a month. But if you want the in-store return option, that's another $2 a month extra. Bottom line, this is not my first choice. Their selection was really quite poor. The website search system was very frustrating to use. They did have most of the, you know, new hot anime titles out, so if you're only interested in new stuff, it may be okay. And if you have a physical Blockbuster store near you that subscribes to the in-store return option and you're willing to pay the extra $2, that might be a reason to go with Blockbuster as well. But again, not my first choice. Their selection really is not very good. Finally, I also want to talk about one online rental company that deals in anime specifically. Rent Anime is the online rental arm of Anime Nation, who's an anime reseller. Anime Nation has been in business since 1995, though I'm not sure how long they've been running Rent Anime, their online rental system. Their headquarters are in Tampa, Florida, and that's where their one and only shipping center is as well. Yes, they only have one shipping center, which means shipping times can be quite long. Me, I'm located on the entire other side of the country from Florida, so for me, it takes like 3, sometimes even 4 days to get my discs. Their selection is really quite good. I would say it's on par with Netflix's, perhaps even better. Although, when you do a search on their website, most of the titles that they list are listed with low to medium availability. But that may be slightly misleading because I honestly haven't had to wait more than an extra day or two for getting these. So their definition of low or medium may not be the same as Netflix's definition. Unfortunately, they don't have Blu-ray. But they do have hentai, so if that's something you're interested in, Rent Anime is definitely the way to go. The reason why I subscribe to Rent Anime is because I'm actually a Netflix customer, but I was frustrated because there were some series on Netflix that I could not finish because they're missing the last disc or two of them. Well, I was able to get those finished thanks to Rent Anime. Now, the Rent Anime website it's very web 1.0. It could definitely use some work. It's kind of janky. It's hard to navigate around. And their search feature is also really twitchy. You have to pretty much type in exactly what you're looking for. Otherwise, it won't find it, even including punctuation marks. I was looking for Fate Stay Night. I typed in Fate Stay Night with no punctuation, and it didn't find it. But when I put in Fate / Stay Night, which is how it's actually listed, it found it. So the website search feature is very twitchy. Unfortunately, there's no consistent way of reporting a damaged disk. On the website, in their FAQ section, their frequently asked questions list, they say that if you get a damaged disk, to mark the box on the envelope that the disk comes in. I didn't see a box like that, so I'm not really sure what's going on there. But I've only gotten one disk so far that hasn't played for me through Rent Anime. And I'm sure that there's some way to contact them buried somewhere on their website that I haven't found yet. Now, as I mentioned before, Rent Anime is affiliated with Anime Nation, who sells anime DVDs. So, Rent Anime offers sort of a rent-to-buy program as well as discounts, so you can buy some of their anime. They also have a trade-in program where you can send in your older discs, and they'll give you a credit towards the cost of your account. Speaking of that, it is a little bit more than the comparable Netflix plan. One DVD out at a time will cost you $10 a month. You can have 3 DVDs out for $20 a month, 5 for $30 a month, and 7 for $38 a month. And again, the same policy applies. Basically, you can rent it for as long as you want. There's no late fees. And once you're done with it, you just put it back in the pre-postage paid envelope that it came in and drop it in the mail. Now, the bottom line here is, if all you're interested in is anime, and you're willing to wait a little while to receive them, Rent Anime is definitely the way to go. And if you're interested in hentai, it's the only way to go. Finally, there are a couple of other online rental places that I only recently learned about that I haven't really had a chance to review. Some of these I've found through forum postings, and people highly recommend them. Green Cine and DVD Avenue are all general-purpose rental services. In other words, like Netflix, they have, you know, your TV series, your movies, but they also supposedly have fairly large anime selections as well. For you Canadians, you might want to check out zip.ca, and for you Aussies, check out webflix.com.au. And there's two anime-specific sites that have come highly recommended to me as well, animetakeout.com and mangatakeout.com. Yes, they have manga as well, so if you're into manga as well as anime, this might be a good way to go. There's also animelane.com. Of course, all of these websites are open to the public. You don't have to be a customer to look through their site. You can do searches and find out if they have a particular title you're interested in. And I should also mention that all of these sites, as well as, you know, the ones that I personally reviewed, Netflix, Blockbuster, and Rent Anime, pretty much all of the online rental companies have some form of trial period, usually about 2 weeks or so, where you can try the service for free for 2 weeks. And if you don't like it, you can cancel, and they're pretty good about honoring that. Finally, you might just consider buying your anime outright. It used to be that it was pretty expensive. You'd have to pay $20, $30 for a disc that maybe only had 3 or 4 episodes on it. But that's actually changed recently. Many anime companies have lowered their prices of their discs outright, while some have created lower-cost budget versions of their titles. For example, the Viridian Collection, Signature Series, etc. Also, we're now seeing a lot of companies releasing their anime in thin pack box sets. The packaging may not be as elegant as old school box sets, but you have all the discs in a series at a really good price. I mean, I've seen them for like $30 or $40 for an entire box set, so it's pretty good. And the price could be even better if you decide to shop at one of the discount online retailers. Amazon a lot of times has some really good prices. They have sales and things. The Right Stuff is also a great place to buy anime at really good prices. They have weekly specials. They have their bargain bin. And, of course, the infamous Sean's Deal of the Day. You can get some awesome prices on various things. The only problem with Right Stuff is that their shipping can be on the slow side. But as long as you're willing to wait an extra day or two, you can often get some excellent prices there. There are also a few other discount online DVD retailers. One place that I've used in the past that I really like is deepdiscount.com. There's probably others. Do a Google search. And of course, there's always eBay and Half.com. The trick with those is that you gotta basically be careful of what you buy, because a lot of sellers actually sell illegal bootlegs of anime. One way to tell these apart is look carefully at the cover art. A lot of times, the cover art will be different than the official DVD release. Sometimes the differences can be very minor, like the color of a character's eyes or hair is just slightly different. So look carefully. Also, a lot of times, bootlegs come with more than the usual number of episodes per disc. So, for example, you'll see an entire, 26-episode series come on only two DVDs. They do this by compressing the heck out of it, so the picture quality is terrible. There's various other ways to spot pirate anime. Do a Google search for the Pirate Anime FAQ. This is a great document that gives you tips and tricks on how to spot the fakes. Having said all that, though, I mean, honestly, most of the stuff I see on eBay is legitimate. And, you might be scared, the evening news says that eBay is just full of scammers and stuff. Well, this is the news we're talking about. They always blow things way out of proportion. I've been on eBay for many years, and I've never had any problems. So the reports of fraud are I think, vastly overblown. And you can honestly find some really good deals there. And lastly, don't forget your local anime retailer, the little mom-and-pop store. With all of these online businesses out there, they're really crowding out the local stores. That's not a good thing. If you possibly can, please shop at the local stores. You can often find some really good stuff there. Usually the prices are pretty good. And, it's keeping your money in the community, supporting the good guys. It's a good thing, if nothing else for karma. So that's it for part one of Anime on the Cheap. I hope you found this information useful. If you have any suggestions, maybe you know of a good way to watch Anime on the Cheap. Maybe you know of a DVD rental place that I haven't mentioned. Tell me about it. Write me an email or call our listener comment line and leave a voicemail. In part two of this series, I'll be talking about ways to view Anime on the Cheap online, either by buying and downloading it or streaming it online. Anyways, look forward to that in our next episode. Now, before I let you go, I've got some cool things that I found I want to tell you about.
The cool find of the week.
If you've ever been curious about Japanese ero games, like visual novels and stuff, well, I got something cool for you. Manga Gamer, a company that imports and sells Japanese visual novels here in the West, has put up free demo versions of three of their top titles. Dakapo, described as a ticklish school romance adventure, is set on the fictional island of Hatsune Jima, where the sakura trees are always in bloom and magic is in the air. It tells the story of Junichi Asakura, a middle school student who lives with his adoptive sister Nemu. On this island, people have strange and mysterious powers and attributes. One day, Junichi's cousin and childhood friend Sakura Yoshino came back from America all of a sudden. To Junichi's surprise, she looks exactly the same as the girl that moved away 6 years ago and hasn't aged one bit. And she came back to remind Junichi of their childhood promise. It is a bittersweet tale of magic, love, hidden desires, and unattainable dreams. Suika is described as a collection of mysterious love stories and comprises a total of four segments, each with different stories and characters. However, all of them take place in Tokiwa Village, a mysterious rural town where strange things happen. It's described by Japanator, perhaps tongue-in-cheek, as kind of like Silent Hill, only an eroge and not insane. And finally, Kira Kira tells the story of four students who are the members of the second literary club at the Christian school Obi Gakuen. Facing imminent closure and disbanding, the club tries to drum up new interest by forming an all-female band, the Second Literary Club Band, shortened to D2B. Well, it turned out to be successful beyond their wildest dreams. So much so that one of the live performance houses in Nagoya, who saw a video of the performance that someone posted on the internet, wants to hire the band and have them go on tour. The problem is, the band doesn't want to, because they have to study for entrance exams or look for jobs. But they were convinced to go on tour by the lead singer of another band. Here's the problem, though. One of the members of this all-female band is a guy. Japanator describes this game, definitely tongue-in-cheek, as kind of like K-On, except in Eroge, and with Neo as a guy. Anyways, these three titles are all PC Windows games, but they don't really require that much in terms of computer hardware. Any computer made, I don't know, within the past 10 years, I mean, if it runs any version of Windows, it should run just fine. And good news for you Mac and Linux people, that also means that these games should run just great under your emulator, VMware or VirtualBox or similar. So definitely check them out. Speaking of K-On!, I've got three cool things that might put a smile on your face if you're a K-On! Fan. Now, this first one might scare you, or it might make you laugh. You might think that you're watching some weird Japanese version of Friday the 13th, but you're not. One very dedicated K-On! Fan, who calls himself Jason and looks just like Jason Voorhees from the Friday the 13th movies, complete with hockey mask and everything. Anyways, he decided that he wants to express his K-On! Love by carving, using just a chainsaw, carving a wooden statue of Mio, and literally, just with only a chainsaw. This is incredible. I mean, this guy has like plus 10 chainsaw skills. You should definitely check it out. I also found a kind of a cool new ending sequence to K-On! That one of the fans on the Japanese video site Nico Nico Doga put together. It's got a cool, different energy to it that I really appreciated. Finally, I found this awesome video done by 12-year-old, get that, 12-year-old Japanese drummer Senri Kawaguchi, who does a fantastic rendition of the drum part to the K-On! Ending theme, Don't Say Lazy. This girl's got talent, plain and simple. The last thing I'm going to leave you with today is a cool little Mahjong game that the people behind the Saki anime and manga are making available. Saki, which started out as a manga and now has an anime adaptation, follows the life of Saki Miyanaga, a timid freshman girl who's brought into the competitive world of Mahjong tournaments through her high school club. Anyways, the official website for the anime has launched an online version of the Mahjong tile-matching game. In this online minigame, the user can play against three computer players, and the online game is designed for the beginners and indicates what options the user has for every move. This is kind of cool if you're ever curious about Mahjong and kind of want a gentle introduction into how to play it. Now, the website is unfortunately in Japanese, but you just click around on things. It's pretty easy to figure out. If you're interested in the Saki anime, it's currently running on Crunchyroll. Anyway, that about wraps it up for this episode of Otaku no Podcast. Again, I'd like to welcome everyone who came here from the Leo Laporte the Tech Guy show. Thank you for coming, and I hope you enjoy your stay. As always, the show notes containing links to all the things I talked about in this episode are available at otakunopodcast.com. You'll also find other cool stuff there, including an About Us page, how to contact us, some cool links, and all sorts of fun stuff, so definitely check it out. If you've got something to say, I'd love to hear it. Feel free to send us an email or leave a message on our call-in line. As I said before, I'm still pretty new at this podcasting stuff, so your feedback is definitely appreciated. Be sure and follow us on Twitter. We also have a Facebook fan page. And if you're on Crunchyroll, we also have a Crunchyroll fan group. Links to all of those can be found on our website. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.